Welcome back, everybody. I'm your host, Greg McKeown, and I am here with you on this journey to learn how to live a life that really matters, how to connect with the people who really matter, how to be able to have the conversations that really matter most. And so I'm so delighted to be back here for part two of my conversation with Topaz Adizes. He is an Emmy Award-winning writer, director, visionary, all of those marvelous things. His tremendous video work has been captured in film festivals like at Cannes and Sundance and IDFA and South by Southwest and so many more. In the first part of our conversation, we talked about why we should try to be able to have these more meaningful conversations with the people who matter. Some of the things that get in the way of being able to do that, the sense of discomfort, the sense of not having created a space to be able to even do this. And we also talked about what we would need to do, physically creating a space, and then using the card games that Az has created to be able to initiate the kinds of conversational moments that actually unite us, bring us closer together, help us to be able to feel safe enough to be unsafe together, so that we can be vulnerable about the things that are so valuable, but so often lie hidden below the surface. In this conversation, we're going to get into the practical things, some of the specific questions that you can ask as you try to create conversations that really matter. Topaz, welcome back to the show.
Great, good to be here. Good to continue this conversation.
Through a process of years, selected through your own curiosity, questions that you felt would most likely lead to a deep conversation, a curative conversation with two people that matter to each other. And then as you experimented with them, you were able to curate the ones that really worked the best. And you took those best questions and you put them into this card game, a series of card games. And then, of course, you've written a book now, selecting 12 of those questions that you feel are most valuable. And I wonder if you could just start walking us through those questions.
I mean, 12 questions for love came out of, you know, the editor, who's a fan of the Skin Deep for years, said, Topaz, can you distill down what are the 12 best questions and why? Why do they work to create a cathartic conversation in any intimate relationship, partner, parent, family, sibling, best friend? And besides the space, there's how do you construct a good question and what is the right sequence? There's a sequence to it, much like from filmmaking, you know, there's a five-act structure. It's three-act, five-act structure in this case, the 12 questions, to take you on a journey such that the last question can be answered, last question, why do you love me, would be answered so much more profoundly because of the journey you had been on than if you just ask out of the blue, why do you love me?
Good grief, that's so great.
There is a exponential thing, there's a compounding effect to the questions when they're in conjunction in a certain sequence with others. So I talk about that in the book and we can talk about that here. Also, the construction of the question. What's key to understand is that we prime the answer by the question we ask. Much like a race course is shaped by the race, the course it's run on or driven on, much the answer is shaped by the question that is asked. Let me give an example.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was thinking maybe the very first example of the 12, like what's the first question?
Well,
but maybe there's a different one that's a better one.
I mean, we can look, if you're looking for a bang effect, it's like, okay, impressive question. We go to the climactic question number 7. And that is, what's the pain in me you wish you could heal and why? What is the pain in me you wish you could heal and why? Number 8 is, what is one experience you wish we never had and why? Those are what I find to be in this structure, the most powerful questions, but they're on an architecture of the previous 6 that bring you to the space. And we can talk about those. Like the very first one, the very first question is, what are your 3 favorite memories we share and why do you cherish them?
What's our 3
favorite memories we share?
Favorite memories that we share and why
do, and why do you cherish them? And see, and this goes to the architecture. The question is not a remarkable question, but or you know, something that's going to impress you. But in the context of the architecture, we start in the past. We start in what are the memories that the synergy that is unique to our relationship has created, because it has created things in the past and it will create things in the future, just like it's creating things in the moment. And so the first three questions speak about the synergy of our mutual love and respect that's really harped on in the past.
What good things have happened in the past? That's not what you're saying. I was trying to restate it. So what am I getting wrong?
Because good things suggest like an output, as though, and that suggests a transaction.
Mm.
I'm not going for a transactional relationship. We're going for a relationship of which we are being in it. And from our being, certain events or certain memories are created.
So experiences.
Yes. What are the experiences that we shared that we could not have shared if we weren't together?
Mm.
Right?
What are those three questions then? So those are kind of together. So
the first three are, what are your three favorite memories we share and why do you cherish them? Then we move to, what was your first impression of me? And how has that changed over time? Now, why is that interesting? Because it harps back to the past. What was your first impression? What was that first thing that drew you in? And how have I changed over time to the now? Because between the first time we met and who we are now, our story has changed. My perception of you has changed. I have changed. Are we acknowledging that? So it's a shout out. It's a reminder of what brought us together. And it's a starting, you know, digging around, how are we shifting since then? What has changed? And then the third one, so this closes the first act, if you will. This is a five act. The closing of the third act, the first act, is a third question. When do you feel closest to me? Now, what that does is it brings it closer, the past to the present. What are the things that happen now where you feel closest? And the individuals will find themselves to go to the moment where they feel close. And that physiologically starts opening up a sense of love and intimacy. Right. So from much like when you ask, what's your favorite memory? I mean, that's going to open up also a sense of love and intimacy and trust. So the first act one, the first three questions really are bringing out the foundations of why are we together? What is unique about our connection? What is at stake?
I love that. So that's your act one.
Act two is conflict. How do we handle conflict and what is it doing? Right.
Okay.
Now we're warming up to the peak, which is the climax, 7 and 8, which I've already mentioned. So let's go to number four. This is the beginning of act two. What are you hesitant to ask me and why? Where are we not shining the light of our relationship, or we're not talking about, we're not bringing, because we're hesitant. There's versions of this. So throughout the book,
what can't we talk about?
What are you hesitant to ask me? What are you hesitant to tell me? What do you think I'm hesitant to ask you? So in this book, I offer 12 questions. I promise you, you ask these 12 questions to your partner, you'll have an incredible conversation. In the back of the book, I offer you other questions to ask that can be replaced in any of these acts, right?
Right.
And more importantly, I can explain why these questions work.
Yes,
but number four, what are you hesitant? So where are we not talking? What is lingering there that we're not, that, okay, right now is not a big deal, but soon it becomes question five. That thing that we're hesitant can become, what is the biggest challenge in our relationship right now? And what do you think it is teaching us?
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting?
They're such well-formulated questions. And actually, that really is why we even have this conversation happening between you and I. I'm being meta for a second. But it was when I read those questions that I thought behind these questions is a real curator. So a lot of people come to you through these videos. And in a sense, I wish I had too, because it's been going on for so long and it's such a great human experiment and it's doing so much good in the world too. I don't know if you know the story, but Johnny Ive, living in England, when he first used the first Macintosh by Apple, had a connection beyond the technology. He could feel that product had been created by someone who cared beyond the actual technical abilities of the machine. And so the questions were like that to me. And that's where we led here. But these are very carefully thought through questions. I know these are just a curated set of a much broader set of questions. Of course, that makes sense. But please continue now.
But let's just focus on, I just want to
riff on that. Please go ahead.
But as we go through these questions, I just want to point out the power of the question. And that's a cliche we all hear, but let me point out, especially this is take home value for anybody who in a relationship or running a company is, okay, when you ask a question, you are priming the answer. So if I drop an F-bomb or say the S word, you know, in my question, that automatically gives permission, though it might come off as aggressive, but that gives permission for the other person to respond also with an F-bomb or S, and therefore break the rules of formality. If I ask a formal question, I will get a formal answer. Mm. If I ask an informal question, I will get an informal answer.
Yeah,
what I've learned from, right? So what do you want? Then ask a question that can help you get what, in theory, what you want. I'm not saying this transactional, but if you want to have a real conversation, then ask a real question that's rooted in curiosity and have the conviction to ask, you know, what the hell is our biggest challenge right now? And what do you think that is? Mm. And that's one. Two is we give a lot of power in the question. So if you're going to go to your partner and said, why do we have a lack of trust in our relationship? If you ask that question, A, you're saying that there's a lack of trust. So you're already an arbiter of truth because you're saying there's a lack of trust. And secondly, you're also giving them the power to be the arbiter of truth because you're not saying, why do you think or why do you feel? You're saying, why do we have a lack of trust?
Yeah.
And therefore they're going to say this. And then they're not arguing from their perspective of feeling. They're arguing from as though they're the arbiter of truth.
Yeah.
And that is already setting up a conversation of conflict. And instead, all you have to do is say, hey, why do you feel that I feel we have a lack of trust in our relationship?
It's such a distinct difference. And this idea of allowing somebody to be an arbiter of truth is you used it almost as if it's an example of something to avoid. I mean, I think that is sort of the context for it, but that is a huge issue. If mm-hmm. you are in any relationship in which either because you have given that power or because someone has taken that power to be the arbiter of truth, you know, this goes to me about as close to the absolute foundation of relationship as exists, because it's like the difference between I try to say what is true versus what I say is the truth. Like I make the truth by what I say versus I try to express in my words an external truth. And that is not nothing what we're talking about.
Let me articulate that in a different way. I think is you can state the truth of your experience and feeling. It's much more difficult to state the truth of our mutual experience and feeling.
Well, I agree.
Right.
But you know, it's just the difference between like, I mean, there is a kind of a psychological way of reading an idea in the Bible where you say, you know, the power of the word, right? The redeeming word, that is to speak what you really believe is true. That how important that is to try to speak the truth as you see it and as you understand it. And then there's an alternative way, a completely contorted, upside down idea, which is it's like, I am God because what I say is the truth.
Right.
And, it's the objective. And one is toxic and one is curative.
Well, one is objective and one is subjective.
Yeah.
Right? Well, and when you have the pressure, when you have the pressure of objective truth, which means it's objective, means it's true for you, true for me, true for everyone. That's a lot. That's imposing a lot of the truth on everyone else on their subjective point of view. I do a beautiful little thing when I go to schools and I talk about truth in high schools and schools. I pull out a quarter, right? And I'll hold the quarter between two students. One on either side of the quarter are two different students. And I ask the student, what do you see? And he says, a quarter. I say, the other student who's on the other side, what do you see? A quarter. Go, okay, but what do you really see? And they look and they say, I see a eagle, tails. Yeah. And I say, the other one, I see heads. Oh, wait. You both see a quarter, right? Yes. But you see tails, you see heads. So where's the truth? Because you're seeing different things. And what I'm saying is, if I ask them what, you know, if the arbiter of your subjective truth is, this is your feeling, you're experiencing, you're seeing tails, you're seeing heads. You know, I'm seeing lack of trust in a relationship. I'm seeing this. This is my experience. And we don't have to argue about my experience. We can argue about what are we doing about it. We can argue about why am I having it, right? And I think there a lot of times, by the virtue of our questions, we create up scenarios where we are going to be in more conflict and more in a round circle, and then actually spending the energy to resolve it or get closer.
100%. If we're speaking in terms of this is what I say is the truth.
Yes.
Then it is inherently, it's like true competition has been produced because now the fight is over who has the control of the truth rather than let's understand, you know, you share what your experience is and I'll try and make sense of what you're saying. And I'll share some of my experiences and let's each make the mean, be the meaning makers. What does this mean for each of us? Let's learn together. It's a very different thing than somebody just telling you what the truth is.
And let's, exactly. And let's bring it home to the power of the question.
Yes.
If you ask someone, why is our business failing? Why is our relationship failing? You're putting them in a position of arbitrary truth. And then the argument is around, is that the reason? Versus just by saying, why do you feel or why do you think? You're not going to argue about whether that's, you'll say, that's their opinion. Great. I got that. And so the power of the question is how we shape it, because that shapes the answer and the possibilities that exist.
But there's like there's a gem here, and you keep saying it so quickly. I want to make sure I'm not missing it. It's that you add in the phrase, why do you feel, you know, what else would you say?
Think you feel?
Why do you feel? What is it that you feel about this? Why do you think that it's this?
What in your opinion?
What in your opinion is this?
What in your experience, right? And so just these slight things. And that's why I say the power of the question is a cliche, but you wield so much power in how you shape the question. And we can talk more about this, because for me, my suggestion, my bottom line is we should all stop looking for answers and we should just focus our energy on creating better questions.
This episode is sponsored by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. So whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person point-of-sale system, whenever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. So sell more with less effort, thanks to Shopify Magic, which is your AI-powered all-star. In my experience with every business that I have built, including this podcast, there are breakthrough moments, and those moments are often the result of finding the right partner. And I think that's a way to think about Shopify, because no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/Greg, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/Greg now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/Greg. Keep going on this storyline here.
So just in terms of shaping the question, is that if you start any question with is, are, or do, whatever comes after that, that question is asking a binary question. Is this the right thing to do? Are we happy? You know, do you want to go to do this? You are already, by starting is, are, or do, you're already setting up an answer that's a binary answer. So just be aware of that. Like, if you can just change the beginning, you already know you get a more interesting answer if you start the question with what or how or why, right? So just to be aware, that's what I mean by power of the question, is that we shape the answer, the possibilities.
Okay.
In the question.
Okay. Okay. So staying on that now, what is the way you start a question if you are going to make somebody else the arbiter of truth? What is that? What do you do? Well, we've just said that if you ask a question with what in your experience has led to you to this, and why do you feel this, and why do you have the opinion that this is, right? That adding that removes the dynamic of somebody else being the arbiter of truth. So how do you ask a bad question that makes them the arbiter of truth? Is it just not putting words in it?
It's like, why do we fight so much? Why do we fight so much? Why is our company failing? Why isn't this working? What should we do? So those questions are setting you up as you're going to be the arbiter of truth, decision making. What I was suggesting here with is R and Y. That's a separate thing about,
yes, I know.
Don't ask binary questions. Yeah.
Yeah. I understand the difference between the binary and so on, but now that we're going into the specific formulation of the question, I don't want to miss this because we've been taught, most people have been taught, you've got to ask questions. I don't think very many people have been taught to formulate questions. Really, how to formulate them. And which element of a question will formulate a certain kind of question. I mean, you've spent 10 years doing something that is unusual and it's rare, but of course it's powerful. If we say that asking questions matters, if we say that asking the right questions is hugely important, but then we don't know how to construct questions. I mean, that's a missing piece. I mean, how?
You want to give you right now five things, top line. Number one, don't make it binary. We just discussed that. Okay. Two, this is a big one. I'll just hit the big one right here. Two, we're talking about in the context relationship. Make sure that in the question, you're acknowledging the two people in the conversation or the three people. What I mean by that, if I ask you a question, Greg, what scares you? What scares you the most? Okay. And if your wife says, Greg, what scares you the most? And the bartender says, what scares you the most? Your answer is the same. It doesn't acknowledge the people asking the question. If instead I said, Greg, what do you think scares us the most? What fears do you think we share? If I ask you that question and your wife asks you and the bartender, you will answer those questions completely differently because it acknowledges the relationship and the people. So number two is that. Ask a question that acknowledges the connection. And we rarely do that in our questions. A lot of the products out there is like, what do you think about love? Well, you can talk for hours about that. It has nothing to do with me. How do you think we feel about love differently and the same? Well, it's acknowledging our connection. So ask a question that acknowledges the people, the participants in the conversation. Three, questions shape the answer. Why are we shaping questions that are disempowering and lead us to a dark place and that are not constructive? Why do we fight so much? Okay, your mind will give you a litany of reasons why we fight so much. But like here, question five, what's the biggest challenge in our relationship right now? And what is it teaching us? Okay, what is it teaching us? There's an empowerment there. We can come out of that.
Right.
With how does conflict make us better? Okay, so ask questions that are constructive. Four is trying to connect two disparate ideas that we don't normally put together. Greg, what does earning money cost you? Right? We don't usually put earning money costing you something, you know? These questions are not perfect in relationship that I'm giving, but they're good examples of what I mean by putting two things that are separate together. What's your favorite memory from your worst relationship? What is your favorite memory from your worst relationship? How often do you think about that? Asking questions that put two different, it's like connecting two different neural nodes in the head together in the brain. A flip side of that is also asking questions, and this is something you love because you're a fan of Carl Rogers, is creating empathies by putting the other person in your shoes. Or them in your ears. Greg, what do you think is the hardest thing being your friend? Now you have to think about them in relation to you and what must be their experience being your friend. Asking questions that puts other people in each other's shoes creates a great deal of empathy and understanding. And last, when we ask these questions, let's not come at it with an agenda, right? It's much harder for someone to really answer and be vulnerable and share and actually be open if you put them up against the wall. So those are the five things.
What was that very last one? I've been taking notes.
Agenda. Don't come at someone with an agenda. Look, there's a joke in lawyers that say, don't ask a question you don't know the answer to. How many times are you in a relationship? Whenever you're in a relationship and someone asks you a question, you know, you can feel that they already know the answer to, and they're setting you up like it's a chess move. You're not really going to answer the question. You're just playing chess now. So if you're going to ask a question, it's got to come from a place of curiosity without an agenda, actually really creating the space for them to be who they are and answer it in what's way that's true for them.
Yeah, I think I want to just think about that last question. I've been thinking a lot about the balance between the tension between having an agenda and being open. And that's a subtle difference, because obviously there is a difference between having no agenda and being open. But I just was listening to a conversation with a diplomat who expressed it this way. As a diplomat, you're leaving and representing a country, so you have to still remember, he said, what team you're on, while also being completely open to the people that you're there and what you're learning. And I thought that tension was, there was something useful in maintaining that. because in life we do have these agendas. So it's maybe something like, for me now, be aware of your agenda, you know, hold that here, or maybe you shelve the agenda for a while, but you're aware of it and then construct, okay, now I want to learn and understand, something like that. But there's a balance between those two things.
But look, I'm offering people the guidelines for how to have a conversation with the people that are intimate with, not just romantic, but intimate, so that they can deepen their relationship. If you're going to have a negotiation,
that's the agenda.
That's the intention. But you know, if you're going to have a negotiation, or you're going to have to be a diplomat, for God's sake, I would hope you'd have an agenda, and you're going to play that game. It's a different kind of game, right? And so what I'm saying is, like, if you're going to your partner, or you're going to someone that you work with, but you want to have a deeper relationship with, it's not just transactional. We need to ask questions that come from a place of curiosity without agenda, because everyone feels it when there's agenda and they don't open, they close.
Well, I don't know why it matters so much to me, but it seems to me that it is having an agenda, but the agenda is the relationship. And so it's not having a private agenda. It's having an intent. I want to understand us.
I think let's just parse that. I think that we should give a distinction, and we could create one here, there probably is a great one, between agenda and intention. And they might have... My intention here is to have a deeper conversation. How we do it and how we get there, I don't have an agenda for, right? Oftentimes in a relationship, you're right? Uh-huh. So my intention,
The outcome.
So the agenda might be the outcome and how, but the intention, what sets the space, that should be clear. And that could be, right? So like, so sometimes, that I think is a big distinction.
So for our conversation, at least here, we're saying an agenda is, I already have the outcome, the solution to the thing that I want already ready. And I'm just going through a pretense of a conversation before trying to make sure that you come to the conclusion I've already come to. So that's what we mean by agenda versus intent. And I do think those are nice ways of passing this and certainly enabling us to understand, you know, what we mean. And intent is, look, I want to come up with solutions. I want to enrich our relationship, but I haven't defined that it has to be this way. This is the answer prior to the conversation. So I love that. What other specific... So you just went through these five criteria for question selection, but you have shared, in addition to that, two specific, you know, micro skills for the actual formation of the questions. Like, so the criteria you've just given me is criteria by which I could judge a question, and it's certainly intent that I could have, but you have an expertise beyond this, because for example, on binary, you said, well, if you're using, let me just get
is, R, or do
notes here. Right. If you say is, R, or do, you're asking a binary question. And
how, why, what?
How, why, what?
When.
When means that you're making the other person the arbiter of truth.
Not arbiter of truth. It's just creating that there's not going to be a binary answer. There's going to be some type of specific answer. The arbiter of truth comes, just listen, what is or what are, just go, just add, do you think or do you feel or in your opinion, just add those bits and then they're just the arbiter of their own subjective truth. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I love that. So really the difference is adding those little extras before, but those are now, we're almost at a sort of Mad Lib level of understanding when you have deconstructed to that level, because now somebody else can pick up those tools and immediately apply them to a question that they're wanting
to ask. That's in the book. Yeah. That's why the book is created, is because where do we learn this? Where do we actually learn to have better conversations? Ask better questions. We don't.
What other deconstructed Mad Lib level tools do you have for formulating questions that support these five criteria for great questions?
I mean, the other tool I have is more for individual questioning. What happens when you're stymied? So I have three tools for what you do when you're stymied and you have a challenge. And this is what comes back to you. Don't focus on the answer. Focus on the question. So how, and this happens to a lot of us, we are stuck in, we cannot crack the code on this question. You're stuck in a question. Where should we live? What are we going to do about this? What are we going to, you know, what should our strategy be? What is the mission of the company? Where should we go on vacation? What should I do with the remaining 10 years of my life? Right? Okay. Well, how do I build my business to go, whatever. Okay. Well, you're stymied. You're thinking about that for hours. You're running in circles. You're dead. It's like, stop, just stop. That's not helpful. Take all your attention and put it on the question. Focus on the question and create a better question. Instead of thinking about how and what, you think about why. And you go back to the, now, three ways to do it. Number one, I just had a phone conversation with someone and I said, look, I don't want to spend time talking about the tactics strategy because we don't even know if that's what you really want to do. Mm-hmm. Let's just do this. What I tell people is create 50 questions. And there's three parts to a really good question that you ask yourself. One is time. Give it an aspect of time. So just imagine three blank fields. The first field is time. In 3 months, in 2 weeks, in 5 years, in 10 years, in the next 25 years, in the next 6 weeks. Okay. Second field is, how does it make me feel? Vital, challenged, uncomfortable, safe, secure, right? Vibrant, physically, whatever. Feel that second. The third one is, how does it affect others? Supports my community, supports my family, inspires others, more intimate with my partner, you know, elevates the workplace. It supports others. It affects others. So the first one is time. Second one is how I feel. The third one is how it affects others. Create 50 questions when you just put in different things in those three slots. And then look at those lists of 30 to 50 questions and circle the one that you want to answer, one that you're most inspired by. And I promise you, the answer will be that much. It will be so clear. It's kind of like your 85%, right? That in your first book, like, instead of spending all the energy on the answer that your bank is like, no, stop. Focus on a great question. Create a great question and the answer will be clear. It'll be, instead of, you know, you create the answer then. And it's so much more empowering. That's one of the three tools I suggest when you're stymied, personally.
Yeah, these are just terrific. I mean, it's interesting to me. And I want to get back to this movie version of this question. Sure. We need to complete that. And it's interesting to me to think of your expertise as having two sets of competence. I think this is actually very interesting. To me, it's interesting. I think it could be useful to you too. Because on the one hand, you have developed the actual questions, right? That's the card games. You know, that's the, here is the solution. Here are the questions that you can ask to build this deep connection and intimacy with people who you love. Okay, that's what the book primarily is. Certainly, that's the way the book is framed, 12 questions, for love. But there is this other competence, which is question formation and formulation and curation. And I think that's extremely valuable. I really think it's certainly something I am absolutely taken with. It's something I'm researching right now. It's something I'm studying. I mean, it is already valuable to remind people, as you just did, ask better questions. Remember, don't focus only on the answers. Look back at the questions. And then you can up the ante by saying, well, don't just ask more questions. Ask the right questions. You know, it's not just quantity, it's quality of questions. Yeah. I mean, all of that's right, but it's so much telling. Okay, great. Let's ask the right questions. Now what? There's not much that's been written that I have been able to get my hands on that really deconstructs how to ask better questions. You know, it's more like somebody has found that somebody else asked a good question. They say, well, I've learned that it's really useful to ask. I mean, this is my own example. It's really useful to ask teams and individuals, what is your essential intent? What is the one most important thing, the priority you want to achieve over the next X amount of time and so on? Well, that question's already been formulated. It exists and I'm offering it, like the business cards, or rather the cards that you have in your business.
Yeah.
But to teach people how to construct questions that can open up new possibilities and can guide them.
Thank you. So that's the initial impetus of the book is 12 questions for love. Yes, you can ask these 12 questions. Yes, you'll have an incredible conversation. But what's more important is not that you're getting the fish, but that you learn how to fish, you learn how to construct the questions. You learn the power of the questions, where to put your energy and attention. And that's really the reason I find it so important that I hope lies in the utility of the book.
It's your next project though, because the framing will matter, right? Mm. Like help. And I don't know the right precise framing for you, because I don't know where the connective tissue needs to exist between where people, you know, your future readers will be, so that they understand. Yes, I need to know how to construct questions, but I'm thinking of the book that's done well and it's called A More Beautiful Question. I mean, mm-hmm. that alone that's an attempt at what we're talking about. But I think the book we're discussing right now does not exist. The actual structure, you know, like you don't say to people, write an essay before you say, here are letters, here are words, here is a sentence, here's how to construct a sentence, here's how to construct a paragraph, here's how to construct an argument, a thesis, here's how you build the evidence. Now you can do an essay. You can't jump to write an essay. But this is what we do with questions. We say, well, you know, it's like we you know, after having got people 20 years in education, maybe not as much as 20, maybe we're saying more like 15, 16 years of education. Now it's not about answering questions anymore. Now you need to to come up with questions. That's as far as we go. I don't think we construct we do not give the tools with which somebody can construct the question. The Lego bricks of question making. Yeah, go ahead. I know you.
That's me going back to my point when I said, where do we learn this? Because there's a great deal of power in the yielding of the question. And so one reason why we don't learn this in school, we don't learn other than what you model in your families and whatnot and family groups, is because there's a lot of power in the answer is shaped by the question. And so a lot of us are asking societally programmed questions.
Oh, I agree with that. Yes. Yeah, of course.
And I hear what you're saying about the construction of the question. I'm just reiterating.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Is this your next book? Is this what you're saying? Are you setting up that your book is going to tell people how to write questions? Is that what you're saying? Or
there is a chapter that I've been working on for years, but I am currently working on again, specifically on questions and formulating them and so on. But in the process of doing it, and now because we're having this conversation as well, I am more animated within myself and more convicted that we simply don't have it. And I think, although I think it is, there's many reasons that schools teach people how to answer questions. There's a lot of reasons for that. I think one of the reasons that you don't reward for questions is because it's just like, we just don't have a curriculum for it.
But the power is yielded by the question asker is what
yes,
we don't understand.
Yes.
It can be.
Okay.
Right?
So if that's true, then okay, maybe you definitely, maybe it's by design that you don't offer formulation tools.
Right.
But I'm not convinced that the people who are creating the curriculum for schools are themselves, that if you actually then challenge them, if you say, okay, I'm going to pay you now, I pay you $1 million to write a course on how to construct questions, you know, as elementary as here are letters, here are words, here is a sentence, here's a paragraph, like building up to how you could ask the right question. I'm not convinced that they could do it. I mean, of course, they could go away and work on it, but it's just an area of knowledge, I think, that has been, is a path less traveled by.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I agree. I'm a witness to that by all the productions we have. When people walk into a room, or when I hear back about people playing the And Car game, they go, wow, these are incredible questions. I haven't asked this before. And therefore, your mind, which is there to serve and answer the question, to chase down any stick you throw, a stick being a question, will find the answer. It goes, oh, I haven't run this track before. I haven't connected these two ideas. I haven't asked that of myself before. Oh my God, look at the room of exploration here. Now put that in the context of a relationship. Oh my God, look at this connection. We was there, but we didn't see, we didn't feel. And that gives you vibrancy. That gives you resilience. That gives you fulfillment of your life and of your relationship. And that's why it's worthwhile having these conversations.
Mm. I love all of it. I really could go, you know, geek out further and go deeper on these questions. There's more, I think, you know, than we've been able to tap into in this conversation. Carry us through with this movie, the different acts of the...
Sure.
So we were
in the middle of the second act. And so we just read question five, which was, what is the biggest challenge in our relationship right now? What do you think it's teaching us? Then we go to number six, which is the end of act Two, it's what is a sacrifice you feel you've made that I haven't acknowledged, and why do you think that is? What is a sacrifice you feel you've made? So it's not that you've made, you feel you made it. So there's not an argument over where it was made, right?
Mm-hmm.
That I haven't acknowledged. So then it's, and this is interesting because he goes, I haven't acknowledged. They say, well, you haven't acknowledged it, but there's a little kind of safe keeping here in the shape of the question. And why do you think that is? Because that puts the person who's answering it in my shoes that didn't acknowledge it, right? So I can go deep and say, you didn't acknowledge it because, you know, you're a narcissist or you're this or that, But and why do I think you did that? Well, maybe because, you know, it reminds you of this trauma as a kid, or maybe because in the past relationship, or maybe because you're so busy at work, you didn't realize it. So it creates a space balanced of empathy because it's balanced. And therefore, because it's balanced, it also allows you to go deeper. So those are the three questions that in mm-hmm. Act Two. And what you notice, hesitant is something that we haven't brought light to. Biggest challenge is right now, what's it teaching us, yeah. right? And then what happens to the small thing that doesn't get addressed? What happens to the big thing that doesn't get addressed now? And someone to solve it has to sacrifice or take a bigger, then it becomes a sacrifice that we didn't acknowledge. And that becomes a big thing that's basically a cancer growing. So mm-hmm. that second act is how do we deal with these small growing conflicts and right? Mm-hmm. Cancer's come. Now we've dealt around that. Now we step into what I call the climax, act three, which mm-hmm. is the peak, is number seven. What is the pain in me you wish you could heal and why? And this is really, there's always a pause. And this is what the book is. I'm taking you through the book. And I was like, and I reference in the book, like, here is an example of a pair from our library of over 1,200 asking this question. You can watch them here. You can see, and you can see throughout our, you know, ask this often, but it's an example of what happens when you ask that question. And if you think about, so there's an exploration that eight is what is one experience you wish we never had and why. So that's the climax. Those are the two peak. Now we need to start landing the plane. We've gone there. We've really shared something vulnerable. Now we go to question nine, what I call landing the plane. It's act four. What do you think you're learning from me? What do you think you're learning from me? This is an opportunity for gratitude, for acknowledgement, for appreciation, because at the end of the day, this other person is there with you. They're sitting through that discomfort, that uncomfortable conversation. Number 10, second part of landing the plane of act four. What is one experience you can't wait for us to share and why? This is talking about the future. Where are we going together, right? Now we start resolving at the very end. And these two last questions are, in my opinion, essential to ask to go to the very beginning of part one that you spoke about, which is how do we know if we lived a life that matters? How do we say the things that are so important because it's so temporal? 11, if this were our last conversation, what would you never want me to forget? This was our last conversation. What would you never want me to forget? Let's go there. Why are we waiting until some disaster happens? And then maybe you'll tell me then. No, we don't have that luxury. Mm. Let's share that now. And by the way, that answer can change every week, every year, something new happens. And the last one is, why do you love me?
Yeah, they're just so good. They're so good. And the construction of them as a movie storyline, past, present,
future. There's a bit of future.
Is itself, you know, well-designed, something that I've, an exercise I've run all over the world with organizations includes an 8-minute process where they first graphically draw down their life from this point, from the time of their birth till now, and then they share it with each other. It's a very succinct experience. And it's, I think about it like a strategic narrative. You are, yeah, it's passed up to the present, and you just suddenly see a whole version of somebody that isn't captured in their job title, which is often as deep as we get in our understanding of somebody in a work environment. And what you're outlining for us in this book and in this conversation is a strategic narrative for the relationship. And so that's such a useful thing to add. You know, if you're in a work environment, okay, fine. Maybe you just need to learn about each other. Just what's your story? You know, you don't have the origin story in the same way as you do in an intimate relationship and a close relationship. But that's what it seems to me that you're doing. And it just so useful, so well constructed, and opens my mind to a lot of applications in my own life and in the groups that I work with. And I just loved every moment of our conversation. So thank you for being with us again on the podcast.
It's a pleasure. It was really a pleasure. Thank you so much for this. It was awesome.
For everybody listening, you know the questions. What is something that stood out to you today? You know, what did you hear? What did you think about? What did you feel? Secondly, what is something you can do now? How can you apply this in the next 5 minutes, 10 minutes, certainly today, that you can initiate something with somebody? Maybe it's getting these, you know, this a card game. Maybe it's getting one of the card games, ordering that. That would certainly spark this conversation to continue. The book is 12 Questions for Love. It's an unusually great position for you because you can get the book and then you can have the cards to go with it. So you will really understand the sequence of these questions, why to ask them, so much more than you would ever get in the game alone. But together, what a great combination these are. This marvelous new book from a marvelous individual, award winner in every way, but now with an award-winning book, 12 Questions for Love. Go order it right now. Go get it immediately. And who will you have that conversation with so that you can continue this conversation now that this conversation has come to a close? Thank you, really thank you for listening.
This episode is brought to you by the Yap Media Podcast Network. I'm Hala Taha, CEO of the award-winning digital media empire, Yap Media, and host of Yap, Young and Profiting Podcast, a number one entrepreneurship and self-improvement podcast where you can listen, learn, and profit. On Young and Profiting Podcast, I interview the brightest minds in the world, and I turn their wisdom into actionable advice that you can use in your daily life. Each week, we dive into a new topic like the art of side hustles, how to level up your influence and persuasion, and goal setting. I interview A-list guests on Young and Profiting. I've got the best guests, like the world's number one negotiation expert, Chris Voss, Shark Damon John, serial entrepreneurs Alex and Layla Hormozi, and even movie stars like Matthew McConaughey. There's absolutely no fluff on my podcast, and that's on purpose. Every episode is jam-packed with advice that's going to push your life forward. I do my research, I get straight to the point, and I take things really seriously, which is why I'm known as the podcast princess and how I became one of the top podcasters in the world in less than 5 years. Young and Profiting Podcast is for all ages. Don't let the name fool you. It's an advanced show. As long as you want to learn and level up, you will be forever young. So join podcast royalty and subscribe to Young and Profiting Podcast, or Yap, like it's often called by my Yap fam, on Apple, Spotify, CastBox, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.